Welcome to Standing in the Sunlight with Cynthia Rose. We are all on an ever-unfolding unique journey. Join Cynthia Rose as she begins her unique perspective to all that is meaningful. Topics and personalities that support your path, bringing inspiration and passion and heart-centered ways to live a more fulfilling life. A down-to-earth and uplifting sharing of what it means to be spiritual, creative, and living life to the fullest by standing in the sunlight. Born an intuitive medium, Cynthia Rose is also an ordained minister, singer, astrologer, educator, and writer. She has studied the intuitive and healing arts for over 40 years. Rise up and stand in your sunlight now with Cynthia Rose.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Cynthia Rose. I'm so glad that you're joining us today. And if you're listening on one of the many playback areas that you can listen from, then glad to have you and so glad you're listening. I'm excited to bring on our guest today, but first I just want to tell you a little bit about how you can get in touch with me. You can always find me on Facebook under Cynthia Rose Medium. We do have a show page that is private if you want to contact. You can also find me on most of the social media on YouTube under Cynthia Rose Medium, Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. Of course, there's my website as well. But that being said, I do hope to hear from you. I love to hear from you about some of you writing to tell me what guests you're liking, and always trying to bring you people that are standing in their sunlight and sharing things that will help us on our path. And today we have Dr. Manuel Matus, or Manny. He's a clinical psychiatrist who studied, he had 40 years of experience working in mental health, and he got his medical degree from University of Manitoba and his diploma in psychiatry from McGill University, which I was going to go to, interestingly enough, but didn't. He has worked in a variety of settings, including the Scarborough Board of Education, University of Toronto, and University of Manitoba teaching hospitals, and more recently in private practice. He has served on the board and the Scientific Council of the Canadian Psychiatric Association, as well as the boards for Physicians for Social Responsibility, Psychiatrists Against Psychiatric Abuse, the Manitoba Satir Institute, and the Learning Institute for Growth, Healing, and Transformation. His accomplishments include many published articles in peer-reviewed journals and presentations at national psychiatric conferences. As he discusses, that's what we're going to talk about today, In the Borders of Normal, his new book. I can let him tell you about that. Actually, I was just going to go ahead and we can talk about, let him share, because I'm pretty sure we've got Dr. Matus on the line to talk about his new book and share with us. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, welcome. I'm so happy to talk to you.
Thank you, Cynthia Rose. I'm happy to talk to you, too.
Yes. And so just, I thought rather than me reading that part, you might want to share a little bit about what brought you to write your new book, The Borders of Normal.
Sure. Well, the subtitle of my book is A Clinical Psychiatrist Destigmatizes Paranormal Phenomena. So my goal in writing my book was to talk about paranormal phenomena in a way that would help people overcome their stigmatization or their embarrassment about talking some phenomena which they have experienced out of fear that they might think that the experience that they've had is abnormal or is in some way making them sound weird. So people might be worried about what other people think when they talk about their paranormal experiences. So what I wanted to talk to you about and what I wanted to share with your listeners is why I got interested in the paranormal, why I wrote a book about the paranormal, and why I've been traveling around the country talking about the paranormal. Why is it so important to me? It started out based on some of my own experiences. When my book, The Borders of Normal, first came out, Many people asked me if it was based on stories which my patients had told me, but my answer was always no, not at all, because whatever a patient tells a doctor is confidential. A doctor is bound by the Hippocratic Oath, which states that a doctor should not repeat anything he's told by his patients, and I don't. The material in my book was based on my own personal experiences, as well as stories from my readers, from my audiences, from family and friends, and from my own reading and research. So as I said, my interest in the paranormal sparked by my own personal experience, and my reason for writing the book was to say to people that it's okay to talk about these experiences to help people overcome the stigma. That's basically it in a nutshell.
That's an important topic. I mean, it is so important. I mean, I can remember just before I was going to school, I was talking to my grandfather in spirit, and my mom said to me, "Who are you talking to?" And I'd done this many times before, and she just said, "You know, you can't do that at school now that you're going to school." And so I told him I wasn't supposed to talk to him anymore, or I wasn't supposed to hear him anymore. And instead of hearing his voice like I hear your voice objectively, that voice became subjective for me. But until that point, it was always objective. And she made it very clear that people would think I was crazy if I did that.
Right. That's so common.
Yeah.
That's so common. It's very unfortunate because many children have that ability to communicate with the spirit world, or maybe they remember their past lives, but they're told not to talk about it. And that continues, you know, when people are adults, they've got the message it's not okay to talk about it.
So I thought
by talking about some of my own experiences, I can let people know that that doesn't mean that you're weird or strange if you have these experiences. It doesn't mean that you're losing your mind. A lot of people have these experiences, and it's perfectly normal.
Yeah, that's how I see it now.
Well, I know. Well, same with me. When I first started having experiences, I didn't tell anyone about them because I didn't know what people would think. I thought people would just kind of dismiss it or else maybe look down on me or think I was weird.
Yeah.
You
know? Absolutely.
And it took a number of years before I really had the courage to tell people about what was happening. I got to the point where I didn't really care what people thought.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you there. That's where I am now. Do you know, my father-in-law was a psychiatrist, and when his wife passed, I would often feel her around, but I wasn't sure. He was had a very religious background, and I asked him one day when my husband was not there, I said, "Do you feel her?" I won't say her name. "Do you feel her?"
Yes.
"Around you?" Because, you know, I wanted to know if he was open to it. "Do you feel her around me?" And he looked at me and he said, "All the time. Why do you think I go to the office?"
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah. And because he was, you know, felt like he was, you know, it was drifting away or something. And then not 15 minutes later, I told my husband, you know, when he was in the washroom, father-in-law's washroom, he does ask him. So he asked him, and he said, no, he wouldn't tell his own son that.
Oh, interesting. You see, he was worried what his son would think.
Exactly, exactly. So he would tell me things he wouldn't tell him. But, yeah, it was really interesting to see the shift in him, her going first, and what was going on in that. So he was a lovely man. So.
Okay. Well, as I write about in my book, visions of deceased loved ones are actually quite common. And different studies have been done to show that approximately 50% of people who are mourning a loved one will either see or hear or feel the presence or feel the touch of a loved one. But the majority of the people who have this experience will not talk about it, even to their closest friends, even to their doctors, because of the stigma. And that's why I say I feel it's important to talk about it to help overcome the stigma.
Oh, so it's so important. I'm in the position where, you know, seeing clients, I'm sometimes able to actually bring up something that's happened to them that verifies it for them, but then the floodgates open. They maybe can't tell anyone in their family, just what you said. And it's kind of sad because, you know, from where I sit, when I pass, wouldn't I want to come back and with those people that I love and I realize I can still communicate? Of course I would.
Sure. That's right.
I want to say also, you put one of my all-time old favorite books in here, and you mentioned The Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah, Illusions.
Yes.
That was a pivotal book for me. So was it the 90s or was the 80s, though? I thought it was the 80s, but anyways, that book for me was... I used to open that book all the time, just randomly. That became like a little trainer for me. And I'd open it to the same page. After a while, I couldn't do it because I figure I was probably bending the book that way. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
But I would open it, and I did the best to keep it so it was not bent in any way. And I'd open it to the same page so often that it just became, I'd laugh out loud. Do you know what it was? It was
interesting, yeah.
What was it,
by the way?
Yeah, it was argue your limitations and they're yours.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Argue your limitations and they're yours.
Yeah, it's a beautiful saying. Just loved it. And I just had, I used that as, okay, I was really working on trying to understand how my conditioned thinking was working in my life and at the time. So.
Well, you know, that reminds me of something that I read when I was sick. I was reading Louise Hay's book, You Can Heal Your Life.
Yes.
And, you know, she recommends certain affirmations for certain conditions. And I had leukemia. And the affirmation that she recommended was, I move beyond past limitations into the freedom of the now. It is safe to be me.
That's beautiful.
And I was saying that over and over, you know. If I was at the gym and I was running around the track, I would just be saying that affirmation over and over. But I like the idea of moving past limitations and it is safe to be me.
Yeah, yes. So you had a long journey of, I just wanted to ask you about that, if you don't mind.
No, I don't
you
mind.
Mention that. Mention that in the book is I had a long journey with pain and ultimately ended in surgeries, but I call it the walk of compassion. I felt like I learned so much and it taught me so much. And you know, does that resonate with you at all about what you went through? Or
well, yes, that's true, because my illness lasted quite a few years. And then, as I discussed in my book, I received a stem cell transplant from an anonymous donor, and I was, you know, it was almost like a miracle. I recovered completely from my illness.
That is such a beautiful story, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, but you know, throughout my life, I had many experiences where I almost died, but I didn't have the typical near-death experience that's described, you know, with the tunnel and the light and the deceased loved ones and so on. But I think because I almost died through illness and accident so many times, I had some of the same after effects of people who've had the classical near-death experience in terms of, you know, decreased anxiety about death and increased belief in an afterlife and increased need for meaning and purpose in life and also a shift from materialism to spirituality. So these are some of the after effects that is, you know, that are described in people who've had a classical near-death experience. But I found some of the same experiences myself. And even though I didn't have the typical near-death experience some people describe they die and then they're resuscitated, but while they're out of their bodies, they go to heaven and they see angels and so on. I've had those experiences, but in bits and pieces, because I did have the experience of seeing angels one time. I did have a dream once where I felt like I was in heaven. So I've had those experiences, but sort of in dribs and drabs, not all at once.
I understand, yes.
And the thing is, like Dr. Moody, you know, who's a pioneer in near-death experience,
yes.
said
yes.
that 1 in 30 Americans either has had or has known someone who has had a classical near-death experience. But I think there's probably an even larger group of people who have come near death, were nearly dead, but not actually dead, and didn't have a classic near-death experience, but end up with some of the same after effects that people have who've had the classic near-death experience. So, I also wanted to mention, when you were talking about that book, Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah, I also read a book when I was a teenager which had quite a big influence on me. It was by Hugh Lynn Casey, the son of Edgar Casey. It was called Venture Inward.
Yes.
I don't know if you're familiar with that book or not, but, you know, I didn't know anything about Edgar Casey. I didn't know anything about past lives or anything like that. And even the concept, Venture Inward, was a new concept for me. So that book really opened up a lot of doors for me.
Well, I have to check that out. I know Edgar Casey's story, but I haven't read his son's book.
Yeah, that was good. Actually, I went to the Edgar Casey Center in Virginia Beach one time, and I've read a lot about him. He was a very interesting person, you know. But anyhow, if I could maybe just share with you some of the experiences I had which put me on this path.
I think our listeners would love that.
Okay.
Sure.
Well, we'll start with, you know.
Oh, do you know what? We're,
yes?
we're going to go to a break. So that's what we're going to talk about when we come back from the break.
That sounds good.
I just looked at the time. And so, okay, everyone, grab a glass of water, stretch your legs, and we'll be back with Dr. Matus, who I'm going to call Manny after this. Okay.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. Om Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers, pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Hi, this is recording artist and composer Yuval Ron, inviting you to a voyage through the chakras, a new double album of guided meditations to transform your life, a sublime musical medicine for nourishing inner peace and reaching to your higher virtues. Get it now at metamindfulnessmusic.com. M-E-T-T-A. mindfulnessmusic.com.
Some knowledge belongs to us and us alone. The way our girlfriends walk, talk, touch their hair. Details that only a sister can know about her girls. But what about our other girls? The ones we carry with us every day. Our bond with our sister girls gives life. But knowing your breasts can save it. Go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. Brought to you by Susan G. Komen and the Ad Council.
Well, welcome back. I notice I'm quieter all of a sudden.
Oh.
Just trying to make sure. Can you hear me, Manny?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure what happened. I'm just going to hold on one sec. Okay. Don't know why I got quieter, but I can hear you. It's just very light. So,
okay, I'll try to
so
talk more loudly.
You were going to tell us about some of the experiences that you had.
Right. How I got interested in paranormal in the first place. So I'll start with when I was 19 years old. I was a second year medical student, and I dreamt about an exam the night before the exam. And I got up that morning, I studied what was in my dream. And then when I went to my exam, the first question on the exam was also the first question in my dream, which I had studied. So I felt like that dream had helped me pass my exam. And, of course, I had never heard the term precognitive dreams. I didn't know anything about it. I never knew anyone who had one, and I didn't tell anyone about it. But, of course, that's the type of experience you always remember. And I've had different precognitive dreams. And I've learned there's a whole literature. There's many books written on that subject. So when I was 23.
We're getting feedback now on them. Cynthia Rowe?
Yes. Yeah, I can't. I'm having a difficult time hearing you, Manny. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. I was repeating. There was an echo. Should I keep going?
Yeah, keep going. I just have to listen real hard. It's hard to hear you.
Okay. Well, I talked about my precognitive dream I had when I was 19.
Yes.
And then when I was 23, I was a resident in psychiatry at McGill. And one night, I wasn't asleep. I was fully awake. But I found myself floating on the ceiling, looking down at my body in bed. And at
that
the time,
would be,
I had
something.
Yeah, it was a very strange experience. I didn't know what to make of it. I had never heard the term out-of-body experience. I didn't know anything about it. I never knew anyone who had one. I hadn't been reading about it. It just happened. It was just spontaneous. But there again, I didn't tell anyone about it. So with these experiences, with the precognitive dreams, with the out-of-body experience, I wasn't frightened. I was more interested, and I was wondering, how does that happen? I was trying to, you know, figure out what was going on. But I just kind of shrugged it off and just carried on with my life. And I, as I said, I didn't tell anyone about it because I just didn't know what to make of it, and I didn't know what other people would think of it. And then different experiences throughout my life, until the point where I saw the angels, you know, at my father's funeral, one on either side of the coffin. And at that point, I felt like I had to start talking to people about what was going on. So okay. I have, yeah.
How was that having, you know, what do you recall about the experience of the two angels at your father's funeral?
Well, again, I know this sounds strange, and maybe your listeners have had similar experiences, I don't know. But it seemed to me that the angels came in to the funeral home on a beam of light. And when there was one on either side of the casket, they were huge. They almost filled up the room from floor to ceiling, and it was a very high ceiling room. They were wearing white robes, and they had wings. They were just beautiful creatures. I couldn't tell if they were male or female. And then the idea came into my mind that they were called ministering angels. At the time, I didn't really know that there were different types of angels, but I just got the idea that they were called ministering angels because they were ministering to my father to help him make the transition to the next level or the next world or whatever term you want to use, the next dimension, you might say. And then just as quickly as they came, they left. And of course, I know no one else saw them. I know I was the only one that saw them. But I felt it was such a powerful experience, I wanted to share it with people.
Yes, that I can understand that. And I think you shared something about Jacob's ladder in that story.
That's right. That was very interesting too, because when I saw the angels, I was thinking of the story in the Bible of Jacob's ladder, where the angels are going up and down the ladder between heaven and earth. And subsequently, a long time later, I actually met a medium who told me she was communicating with my father, and he said to her, or has said to me through her, now I understand the meaning of Jacob's ladder. And I thought, there's no way she could possibly know that, because I hadn't told anyone about it. And no one knew about it. So, I mean, they knew about the angels, but they didn't know that I had this idea that this was like the story of Jacob's ladder in the Bible. So
yeah,
I just thought, well, that's... so to me, like, that was a confirmation, you know?
Yeah. That's a beautiful piece of evidence, which, you know, when they study mediumship, that piece of evidence would be rated zero when it's studied under the strict medical guidelines of doing studies. That would have been rated zero, but it sure was probably the one of the most important things for you, I would think.
That's right. That's right. That was very important. I mean, I just shivered when I heard that, because I thought there's no way she could possibly know, you know.
Yeah.
So, I've had many experiences which I think most people have experiences which could be considered paranormal, but they just kind of shrug them off. But I mean, the word paranormal, if you look at the word itself, paranormal doesn't mean abnormal. The word, like the prefix para, means beside. Just like we have paramedics that work beside doctors, or we have, you know, paralegals that work beside lawyers. So we could say the paranormal occurs beside the normal, but it doesn't mean abnormal. And there are many types of paranormal phenomena which are actually quite common, such as ESP, which is extrasensory perception, or intuition or telepathy. Those phenomena are quite common, and I think people are more willing to accept them. But there are other types of paranormal phenomena, such as visions or messages from the spirit world or precognitive dreams, which are less common and less accepted. But they're significant and they're important to the person who has the experience. And many famous people have talked about precognitive dreams, you know, and premonitions and intuition. I mean, even, for example, Abraham Lincoln dreamt about his assassination 2 weeks before he was assassinated. And Mark Twain said that he saw the body of his brother 2 weeks before his brother died, and so on. And Charles Dickens. There's many examples of famous people who have talked about and written about precognitive dreams, premonitions, intuition, and, you know, phenomena which we would characterize as paranormal.
Yes. Yeah. That's something that, for me, you know, when we have precognition about something, what used to trip me up when I was younger was, why couldn't I change it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know? That was,
yes.
And it took me a long time to sort of, I guess, make peace with that and understand that. But, you know, I had a message in a life, a dream that saved my life, but ultimately led to injuries and all that. So I sat there for 3 or 4 months going, why would I dream it if I couldn't stop it? Do you know? But
well, if it saved your life, that was important. But if it saved your life, then I think that was the most important thing. You know.
It did, yeah.
Yeah, and some people receive yes. Go on.
Oh no, go ahead. Some people receive messages.
I was going to say, some people receive messages in their dreams which they can act on. And there's the story in my book about this woman who dreamt that a chandelier was going to fall on her baby's crib. And she went into the baby's room and took the baby out of the crib and into the bed with her. But when she told her husband the dream, he said, oh, it's just a dream. Never mind. Just go back to sleep. But she acted on her dream, and she basically saved her baby's life, because subsequently the lamp did fall on top of the crib. So, you know, I mean,
I was really moved when I read that. I was so glad she had listened to that insight that had come to her.
That's right. And also, well, sometimes people act on the messages, sometimes they don't. But then the question arises, how do you know if it's a precognitive dream or if it's an anxiety dream? For example, you could say, well, maybe she was worried something bad was going to happen to her baby. You know, but there's an author, Larry Darcy, who's written about dreams and premonitions and precognitive dreams. And he says the dreams that we should consider important or that we should pay attention to are dreams that are recurrent, dreams that are about death, or dreams that are extremely vivid. So, you know, because, of course, people do dream about things that they're anxious about, but certain dreams, you know, as we find out, are precognitive. We find out after the fact. So that's kind of a guideline for your listeners in terms of whether or not to act on the dream.
Yes. You know, I had the same dream every night until I was... I just had it every single night, but I remember somewhere around the age of 11... it started to dissipate. Maybe like a couple of years before that, it would be once a week. And then when I was 11 or so, I think it stopped. By the time I was 12, I wasn't having that dream anymore. But I had the same dream every night for years. And I would wake up writing on my, like as if I was taking notes on my comforter. And then I would realize that I didn't have any notes. Now, I don't know how much a 4 or 5 year old would be taking notes, but I was taking notes copiously and then would wake up and realize, because I don't think I was writing yet. That's the funny thing.
Right.
But then I would realize that, oh, I don't have paper. It's gone. And I would get kind of like, oh, I don't have it. But I had the same dream every night. And, you know, I remember processing it with a friend, a mentor, but I never really, I wasn't sure what that meant. You know what I mean? It was so profound for so many years and I just didn't quite get it. So.
Well, how do you see it nowadays? How do you see that dream?
I think there must have been, so just briefly, I was, there was a lot of fires going on. And I was pulling everybody into our house to save them. And I was aware that they would be safe. And I would go out into the street and I would find kids and adults. I would bring them into the house and they would be safe. And, you know, all I can think about that now is that there was, I knew that when I was 4 or 5, I had some sense of my purpose in life and what I was going to do. There was a sense of direction, but perhaps there was a great need for my soul to serve in some way. And I was aware of that. I don't know, but the fire, the fact that it was fire was, and the fire didn't burn me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
Well, I just wonder if that dream could be in a sense a precognitive dream, you know, in the sense that, you know, what you're doing now, you're trying to elevate people, trying to help people, and in a sense, trying to save them.
Yeah, I think there was I was a very different little girl. I would pray every night, and I knew some things about, like, I just knew I would be a mother. I didn't think I had to be a mother. I just knew I would be a mother, and I knew I was here to help people. And
right.
Yeah, I just knew these things, but yeah, it had something to do with a need to help people or something. And I think maybe that was something my soul knew, and my knowingness was nurtured from a young age on and on and on. And I almost feel like I even went through tests of how much stronger I could create, you know, have a stronger knowingness. And there was certainly times when, had I followed the train of thought of some other person or sort of thing, even with my severe accident, I told, you know, the medical profession, there's a structural injury here, but, you know, there was nothing, MRIs weren't powerful enough. They couldn't find it. So they just kept saying to me, no, 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 but I just knew. Do you see? In a way, that was the ultimate, I know what I've got here. But yeah. Because we can have conditioned thinking, right. You can easily wonder, am I putting that on there? But it was like, no, I know. And when I came to the end of that, I thought, I my knowingness will never be wavered.
Yeah, that's good. Well, it sounds like you had a sense of mission from a very young age.
I did.
Somehow over the years, and you, over the years, you learned to trust your own intuition.
Yes, yes. But it also sounds like you also, that sounds like what I'm reading in your book as well.
That's true. I did. But as I said, you know, for many years, I didn't really make sense of it. I didn't really see a pattern. I just saw a series of isolated events. But after a while, it started to cohere. And I could see that there was I could even use the word message. There was a message throughout. You know, there was a theme throughout these events and throughout these phenomena. So, yeah, I think that's true, too. I think I do share some of those same things that you did, too. And in fact, that's, I think, part of my mission, you know, in terms of writing this book and trying to help people accept the fact that these phenomena are real and it's okay to have these phenomena. And it doesn't mean that you're losing your mind. It doesn't mean that you're weird or strange. It's perfectly okay to have these experiences and it's okay to talk about them. And I think the more people talk about them, the more that, you know, other people will talk about them because they hear that, you know, it's okay to have these experiences, and it doesn't mean anything sinister. But aside from that, it also gives people a deeper feeling about meaning and purpose in life, if they can appreciate some of these, you know, spiritual forces or entities behind common everyday phenomena. It somehow makes life richer.
Oh, absolutely. Do you know, I think the listeners might really enjoy, you know, you talk about, we're at the last break. Okay, so stretch your legs again, take a sip of water or your coffee or tea or whatever you're having at the time of day. We'll see you in just a moment.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Tune in to The Practical Intuitive, Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World, with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more, all to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Hi, this is New Age Grammy winner Paul Avgerinos. Thanks for listening to Om Times Radio, and please support my peaceful healing music with a purchase at iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you shop for fine music. Just put my name into the search engine, Paul Avgerinos. A, V like Victor, G like George, E-R-I-N-O-S. You can also visit me at roundskymusic.com. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you the brightest of blessings.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions, don't text and drive.
Visit stoptextstoprex.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light,
Noise, and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back, and I do believe we have a caller on the line, Louise.
Hi, yes, Cynthia.
Hello, welcome.
Hi.
Hi, I'm really enjoying your... For us?
Yes, oh. I do. I'm really enjoying your interview very much. It's so interesting. I'm wondering if you could ask a question like about distinguishing between psychotic hallucination, let's say, and paranormal experience, although I think both should be destigmatized. It would be a much better world. I'm just wondering how you would differentiate. That's my question.
I'm laughing because it's just where we were going to go. So thank you so much. I'm going to let Dr. Maidus speak about that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Louise, for your question. I think that's an important question. And that's one of the reasons why people are reluctant to talk about paranormal phenomena, because they're worried that they're losing their minds. So just briefly, psychotic hallucinations tend to be frightening and disturbing. And there may be more than one voice. There may be two voices talking to each other about the person or threatening the person or telling him or her what to do. The psychotic hallucinations may not even be voices. There may be whirring sounds of machinery or the sound of insects or chirping or loud screaming. Psychotic hallucinations tend to occur very often. They may occur every day, even every minute of every day. Whereas non-psychotic or psychic voices or visions tend to occur far less often. They may, in fact, happen only once or twice in a lifetime, and they tend to be comforting and reassuring, not frightening and threatening. Now, even if a non-psychotic hallucination, voice, or vision only occurs once or twice, it can have a lifetime impact. But it's important to realize that a diagnosis of psychosis cannot be made on the basis of a single symptom. For example, with schizophrenia, there's a whole host of symptoms that affect every aspect of the individual, including the person's thoughts, moods, and behaviors. The other important distinction is psychotic hallucinations interfere with a person's ability to function at work or in school or at home with the family. Whereas if someone has a psychic experience, they have the experience, and then they just go on with their life. It doesn't interfere with their ability to function. So that's another important distinction. So does
Louise?
That answer your question?
Oh, she did. She, okay.
That's okay. Okay, all right. Well, I think it was a good question. I'm glad we covered that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just wanted to mention that there is a very well-known medium, George Anderson, who wrote a book, Lessons from the Light, as well, that talks about his diagnosis, I think, as schizophrenic as a child, and was institutionalized until his mother figured out what was happening. And that might be an interesting read as well. Pick up The Borders of Normal by Dr. Maidus, and also that other book might give you some more insight into your question there, Louise.
I'll just add that the experience that George Anderson had, unfortunately, has happened to other people as well. Some people have been misdiagnosed, and, you know, they were admitted to hospital and treated for schizophrenia, even though they weren't schizophrenic. So that has happened. I don't think it's happened. I don't think it's happening as much recently as it was maybe in the 50s and 60s. But in my book, The Borders of Normal, I refer to a study done by a psychologist where he hired actors to go to the emergency room of different hospitals to say that they were hearing voices and to see what happened to them. And this was in the 70s, actually. All of the people who were actually actors pretending to hear voices were admitted to the hospital, diagnosed with schizophrenia, and given medication. Of course, they didn't take their medication. And I said in my book that the other patients on the ward knew that they were faking their symptoms. So they could fool the doctors, but they couldn't fool the patients.
Yeah, but, that's great.
Yeah, but I don't think that's happening so much anymore. You know, hopefully it's not.
No, I don't know if they're doing any of these in Canada, but I know a medium that I think one of her siblings is schizophrenic, and they want to, or maybe it was bipolar, they wanted to study her and the brother to see the difference. Are they doing any of those studies in Canada?
I think so. I mean, I'm not familiar with the person you're talking about, but I know there is a book, I think it's called The Psychic and the Scientist, written by a doctor whose mother was psychic, and he writes about his own experience, and then he writes about his mother. So, yeah, there have been some books written on that subject. I know of a few, yes. That's an interesting subject.
It really is, because, you know, I mean, so there are some great mediums that are also, say, bipolar.
Right. Well, the thing about bipolar is, oh, go on.
No, I wanted to ask you what you thought of that, or if you had anything to say on that.
Oh, sure. Well, what I would say is that, you know, if a person has a diagnosis of bipolar, that means they have episodes of both mania and depression. But between episodes, they're pretty well back to normal functioning. So if a person is in a psychotic episode, whether it's schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, then that would, I think, disrupt their ability to be psychic, because they're dealing with, you know, health issues, mental health issues. But once a person with bipolar, if this person is a medium, recovers her health, then I think she could resume doing what she was doing before, as could anyone else who has an illness and then recovers from it.
Right.
But also,
I know that, yeah.
Yeah.
Go on. You go ahead.
Okay, now I was just going to say, but I think that would be rare to be both, to have both. You know, I think it's usually one or the other. That's all. Yeah.
So. Oh, there's so many things I could ask you about in the book. Is there something that comes to mind? Because I've just got so many, I had so many markings here as I was reading it. Oh, mention this, or there's so much.
Well, one thing I could say is, you know, how do you know if you receive a message in your dream? What's the difference between a dream and a vision and a hallucination? So, for example, I've received what I consider to be messages in my dreams, but that's different from a dream where, in a dream, like you're a character, it's almost like you're a character in a play, there's other people in the dream, and you're interacting with the other people in the dream. And then when you wake up, the dream kind of fades from your memory. But if you receive a message, or in my case, when I have received what I consider to be messages, it's just more or less something, it's almost like a thought or some words. It's not a story with characters or with people in it. You know, I think I mentioned in the book, I received a message once, and I just woke up, and I just remember this message. It said, "This is a world of illusion, and the biggest illusion is time." And that was the message, and I just remember that when I woke up. So to me, that's different from a dream, you know. And, you know, that type of message, and there have been several others, they just stay with you forever. As opposed to a dream, which in most cases you don't remember. Dreams tend to fade.
Yes, so it's interesting. I think, yeah, it's probably unique to how we all describe it. For me, a visitation in a dream, the energy of it is different. It's very strong. Mm-hmm. And it's a very different feeling from when, say, if I were to dream of my mother and my mother is there. They're very different.
Yes, yes. I was going to say, even when we're awake, it's very different having a thought, your own thought in your own mind, and receiving a message. You know, it has a different quality. It has a different feel to it. Would you agree?
Yes, although I think that I think like in what I do, or in anybody doing this type of work, I think it's really important to it's very, very subtle. So I think we can start out with a message and we can add in things if we're not careful.
Oh, yes.
I think we really have to be focused.
That's true. The other thing I wanted to add in terms of the distinction between psychic and psychotic, I talked about psychotic illnesses, which can present with hallucinations. But there are also some medical illnesses which are not psychiatric in nature, where people can have visions. And for example, if someone has an epileptic seizure, especially temporal lobe epilepsy, they might have a vision. Or for example, if someone has a migraine headache, often migraine sufferers experience an aura. So it's like they have a warning that they know the migraine is coming on. And during that aura, they can have visions. And also there's certain medications which can have hallucinations as a side effect. And of course, drugs and alcohol, either intoxication or withdrawal, can produce visions or hallucinations. So there's many different things that can produce hallucinations. So it's not just psychic versus psychotic. There are also medical illnesses that can present with hallucinations.
Right. And you did mention that some of these drugs are now being studied again,
yes.
But more in a more ethical way.
That's right. Well, certain hallucinogens, which can produce hallucinations, such as, for example, psilocybin, has been used, you know, in some studies now, which they're looking at giving these drugs to terminally ill patients to help them overcome their fear of death. And they are actually having very good results with them. And as you know, some of these drugs are used for sacramental purposes by Native American Indians, for example. And the drugs such as, you know, one I mentioned psilocybin, and another one is ayahuasca. And some of these drugs are having a beneficial effect. They're also being used to treat conditions such as alcoholism. You know, I know some studies have been published that show good results using hallucinogenic drugs to treat alcoholism. So, yeah, for a long time, research with these drugs was banned, but now they're coming back into focus, and there's some research being done at some very reputable universities, and they're having good results. But, yeah,
it would be interesting to see.
Yeah,
it'd be interesting to see what comes out of the ayahuasca, because I have to say I've heard both sides, people not having good experiences.
Yeah. Right.
And like really terrible experiences, and of course there are people that say that it was great for them. So it'll be interesting.
Right. Well, I think the environment, the setting is very important, and also, you know, the studies are being done with, you know, with a trained therapist, a clinician who's present throughout the whole time, you know, that the drug is ingested and can monitor and talk to the person who's having the experience. So I think that makes a big difference.
Yes. So, you know, I want to make sure we don't run out of time. Do you have any, where can people buy The Borders of Norma? And what's the release date on this book?
No, it's already out. And if people want to buy it, it's available on Amazon, and it's also available at Barnes & Noble. And in Canada, it's available at Chapters Indigo. And also people can connect with my website if they're looking for a way to buy the book. So my website is drmatas.ca. So I'll just spell it. That's drmatas.ca. If people want to connect with me through my website. And also I have my Facebook author page is just author Manuel Matas. So it's facebook.com/author Manuel Matas. And on Twitter I'm at Manny Matas. And I guess that's about it. I'm also on Instagram at Manny.Matas. Yeah. But the book is readily available through Amazon.
Okay, and I'm just going to repeat The Borders of Normal. So if you're listening and you'd like to purchase that book, it's called The Borders of Normal. I do hope that I love your topic. I love you've got a lot of information in there for people, very vast. And I think this is like an emerging topic that we definitely need more. So maybe in the future there'll be another book that you'll cover in this way, because there's so much more needed with this.
Right. Oh, thank you.
Yes, there's so many people, you know, I regularly wondering, is what they're having okay? Is it normal? And there are people that they're not having a vision. They're in their mind. And just from a spiritual perspective, for me, it's almost like we can be trapped within our own auric field and mm-hmm. creating this kind of experience. And I don't know if that's truly what that means, if we're having an episode, but it's like in our auric field. But when that information comes from the other side or something, it's outside of our auric field. That's just how I understand it. But who knows? One day maybe we'll know.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, it was so lovely to have you on the show. I enjoyed speaking with you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I enjoyed our conversation too.
Yeah, thanks so much. All right, everybody. Much love to you. Have a good week. And we'll talk to you next week from Aloha Land in Hawaii. Okay.
Nice.